This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. The Flint Community School District's new superintendent is on the job now, and we thought we'd check in with him. Derek Lopez, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks a lot, Lester. How are you today?
Just fine. You're the new kid in school. How's the school year going so far?
Oh, it's going really well. The first part of the year has launched really well. Our kids are engaged and ready to learn. Our teachers are there, ready to teach them, and we're just really happy about the start of the school year thus far.
You've been an administrator in schools in the Detroit suburbs. What did you learn there that you can bring to Flint to help the kids?
So everything that I've actually done in my past professional life in education has actually prepared me for the work here in Flint. And they're just bits and pieces that I've brought from my experience in Pittsburgh and my experience in Southfield, even my experience as a nonprofit leader. But most of all, it's really about figuring out how to make sure that our kids are available to learn, meaning that all of the things that are outside that are actually noise in their lives, we've got to figure out how to mitigate those negative factors so that they can come to school and be ready to learn or available to learn. And that really is about wrapping your arms around the entire child so that they can actually get to the academic content that is being measured on these state assessments.
Well, let's talk about the challenges in that direction. More than 93% of Flint school kids are living in an economically disadvantaged situation. I mean, how much does that affect educating them?
So it affects everything. So the 93% number is, in fact, the key indicator for with respect to academic achievement and poverty is the number one indicator. There is a direct correlation between those kids in poverty and their academic achievement, simply because the barriers that are placed in front of kids because of economic disadvantage really do disadvantage their literacy skills and disadvantages their numeracy achievement. So a youngster who was actually born into poverty experiences less books in the household, experiences less time being read to, and therefore they don't speak the language that is academic English until they get into the classroom, which puts them far behind those youngsters who are in middle class or upper middle class households who have literacy-rich households. That literacy-rich household, the kids are oftentimes engaged in questioning. They actually, their parents are actually more apt to read to them, and they're actually able to hear that academic language. So therefore, when they see that academic language on an exam or on the first day of school, they'll say, oh, that word represents this. Because language is alive, but words on paper, they're actually dormant and stagnant, and they're just a representation of the lives that our kids actually lead. So it's important for us to recognize that if a kid doesn't have those experiences before they get to classes, then they're not going to be able to adapt to the stuff that is in front of them that is academic English. Hope that made some sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Something linked to that I want to ask about. This is from the Michigan dashboard of the school, and it said across the board on MSTEP and ACT scores at every grade that was measured, the rate of proficiency is below 15%. Now, how do you – that seems like a significant hurdle for both teachers, the administrators, and the kids. How do you tackle that?
So you have to tackle it with a laser. So there are a couple of things that are key leverage points to attacking that 15% proficiency or less than 15% proficiency rate. First thing is making sure that our kids are available to learn. I talked about that with respect to mitigating those barriers around their Maslow needs, their food, nutrition, shelter.
Yeah, you need to explain what the hierarchy of Maslow is. So.
Sure. So Maslow's hierarchy of needs talks about that pyramid moving towards self-actualization. So kids who are at the lower part of the pyramid, which is their survival needs, which is where our kids are stuck, that's the physical need for food, shelter, clothing. And then there's the next level of the pyramid that is about love and care. Then there's the next level of the pyramid, which is about relationships and making sure that those relationships are whole in life. And then you get up to self-actualization, because once you go through survival and your emotive care needs, then you can begin to think about the things that are important in life and therefore become self-actualized. So that's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Our kids are at the lower two tiers of Maslow's hierarchy of needs with respect to their need for food, shelter, clothing, and survival, and their need for love and care. When you can move them into the third level, which then helps them to sort of be ready to receive that data for learning, then, in fact, you've actually begun to educate them. That's on the kid side. On the adult side, our educators have been beaten down for the last two decades by No Child Left Behind and all those things that the state has put upon them. So our educators are feeling less than efficacious around their work product. So we have to rebuild them. We have to rebuild their sense of self. We have to rebuild their capacity and give them the tools and the toolkit that are necessary for them to actually educate children. That includes an up-to-date curriculum. That includes making sure that our teachers actually have manipulatives, that kids can move things from concrete to the abstract. That includes making sure that our teachers themselves are cared for and feel well themselves, because what we have not talked about is that our teachers and administrators are suffering the secondary trauma that's related to the primary trauma that has actually been put upon our kids and families in Flint. So those are the two prongs upon which I'm going to be working as directly as I can to make sure that our kids are educated and therefore succeed on those exams. So kid wellness and adult wellness are the key to making sure that we achieve what we need to achieve.
I'm wondering if you've gone around to the schools and talked to the kids, and if so, what was your message to the kids in your schools?
Yeah, so I have actually been able to go and talk with some youngsters, and they light up my day because they are so full of hope. They're so full of what the possibilities are, and they're depending on us as the adults to make that a reality for them, no matter if they're age 6 or if they're age 16 or 17 and they're seniors at Southwestern Classical Academy. They're depending upon our adults and on the adults to make sure that their lives are whole at school so that they can have full lives. And so all I've heard from youngsters is, man, this is a great start to the year. Can we do this? Like our seniors want to go on these trips. So they're like, Mr. Lopez, can you make it possible for us to go to another place so we can actually experience another location? We're absolutely going to try to make that happen with our partnership. Our babies are asking, hey, you know, can we have a new playground? Because we really need a new playground because our playground equipment is old and dilapidated. And I'm like, hey, we're going to work to do that with our partners here in the community and maybe even with our national Kaboom partner to really build playgrounds as a community exercise around our schools. All of those things tell me that there is hope embedded in their lives, and we as the adults cannot disappoint them.
Now, I know that schools is under a lot of liability debt, and there are buildings that need repair that aren't getting repaired. But rather than get into all of that, let me just try to sum it up in this one question.
Mm-hmm.
Looking short term, at the end of this school year, what do you hope is your most significant contribution?
Wow. So what I would hope I would have been able to do is to reestablish strong relationships with and among the various constituencies in the community of Flint to support and grow our kids. That requires the infrastructure to be dealt with. That requires our ability to sort of talk with one another and to, even if we disagree, to not be disagreeable. That requires me to sort of dig deeply into our finances and to figure out how do we actually begin to pay a living wage, a competitive wage to our teachers and to our administrators so that they're not being sort of attracted to districts that actually pay a higher wage because they've had a salary freeze. That requires me to be attentive to the needs of the adults in the system, from the Board of Education all the way down to the classroom and to our parents, so that we can meet the needs of the children that we're seeking to serve. And so my goal really this year, if it's a successful year, is that we have reestablished the necessary relationships with and among the people in the system, with people outside of the system who have the best interests of our kids and families at heart.
Derek Lopez is the new superintendent of Flint Community Schools. It was a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure, Lester. Anytime. Have a great day.